This is file 60. This is Jane McMillan. I am interviewing Patricia Barton. She's going to talk about the ambulance service where she is. Her title is Chief of First Aid, and she's also going to talk about Crescendo. Today's date is September 18th, 2013. What is your full name?
Patricia H. Barton.
And what is your birth date?
10-19-1951.
And your birthplace?
Honolulu, Hawaii.
Your parents' names, please.
Catherine Levy Height and Robert Atkinson Height.
And the Catherine is with a C?
Yes, C-A-T-H-A-R-I-N-E.
And Height is H-I-T-E?
Correct.
And do you have siblings?
Yes, my brother, elder, is Charles Harrison Height, and my sister, younger, is Catherine Height Dunn, D-U-N-N.
Your father's middle name was?
Atkinson.
What's your educational background?
How far back do you want to go?
Well, let's go college. Let's go college.
Sweetbriar College in Virginia. I have a BA from Sweetbriar, and I have a Master of Fine Arts from Boston College. Boston University. Excuse me, I get them confused.
BU.
Yes. In their early music department.
And how did you come to this area?
My husband was offered a position for a New Yorker in Chicago, New York, and which is he's the facilities manager on a very big property for some people who live in the city, and so we packed up and moved down here.
Wonderful. And how did you get involved with the ambulance service?
First they recruited my husband as a driver, and when I was in the horse industry, which I was for a long time,
You were in the horse industry.
Oh, I was in the horse industry, and I did a lot of vet tech work with my own animals and with a bunch of the vets around. And so medicine has always been of interest. So he was on the ambulance for a year, and I decided I would become an EMT.
Aha! And with EMT, you have to have a lot of training and certification.
It's a 60-hour course to start, and you have to pass a test that satisfies the state of Connecticut and also the national registration of EMTs initially. And then you have to recert that certification. For the first three recerts, it's every 2 years, and then you get to go on the three-year plan. And then it's every three. And then after you've been on for as long as some of the people on our squad have, we have one person who's actually exempt from recerting. and then it goes to five. I don't know, there's this very long formula. I think they figure after a while
you really know what you're doing.
Yeah.
All right. Do you like it?
Oh, absolutely.
Why?
Gives you a chance to help people. I find it very interesting in terms of things that can happen to people, go wrong with people, all the rest of that. And it also gives one a way of giving back to a very good town.
Wonderful. Your title is what, specifically?
I am specifically called First Aid Chief. I am the Chief of First Aid, which means all the active supplies and all of that. It also, under my purview, is training. I take care of all the training. I make sure everybody is certified properly for the state, for OSHA, for OEMS, all of those various.
What's OEMS?
It's the Office of Emergency Medical Services. It's a state and federal organization.
Okay. It
falls under FEMA. It's very complicated.
Yes, I can see. What are some of the things that you have to order for supplies?
Well, we keep the ambulances fully stocked, not only according to state regulations, but according to things that we like to have. Mm-hmm. Every squad has their own way, if you will, within their ambulances. So I order, you know, bandages and stiff neck collars and straps for the longboards and nasal cannulas, which is a oxygen device,
yep,
and non-rebreather masks and oxygen for the ambulances and for the first responders. All of that sort of stuff. I mean, many, many things go into an ambulance, including EpiPens and activated charcoal and glucometers and all of the tools of the trade.
And in talking with Jackie Rice, you've got a variety of different kinds of emergencies. You've got the Appalachian Trail, you've got the Housatonic River, mm-hmm, as well as gear, Noble Horizons, mm-hmm, ordinary heart attacks, mm-hmm, car accidents. You've got everything. It's not just one small part of the forest. You've got a lot of different kinds, so you've got a lot of different emergencies you've got to be prepared for.
That's correct. The ambulances, however, are stocked the same way for every call, mm-hmm, and it's just certain things that we use on different calls. The other pieces of equipment that live in our garage are much more specific. Mm-hmm. Our rescue truck is very specific. We have an ATV and a gator.
I learned what that was.
Yeah, which are all very specific to certain kinds of calls. Mm-hmm. The ambulance is the ambulance, if you will.
Okay. And there's two of them, aren't there?
Yes.
We have two.
Okay. We do.
What are some of the training programs you've developed?
I have, organized is the best term.
All right.
A number of different lecture scenarios. For one, including the latest one, was a gentleman from the Henry Lowe Heart Center at Hartford Hospital, whose expertise is heart transplant, and he also developed a device that is called a left ventricle assistive device, which is an implant into the heart. Mm-hmm. There are 70 patients in our general area who have these devices. Care of these patients is very different than care of the regular patient. So, Stephen actually found an article in the Hartford Courant about this guy, and I said, oh, bingo, I should try to find out if he'll come talk. And
wonderful.
He came, and we invited a number of squads around, plus the medics and the mm-hmm. Salisbury visiting nurses, because they would be involved. And we had about 50 people there
garage,
and he brought a prototype. He also brought two LVAD patients with him who had agreed to come so that we could listen to the hum in their chest. I mean, it was fabulous. Fabulous. And it was, so, anyway, those are the kinds of things that I like to organize that sort of challenge people's expertise and their knowledge. And then I do simpler things, like last week I ran a little training for the new people on our squad, which was titled Taking Vitals in a Moving Ambulance.
That would be important.
Oh, very. And difficult.
Yes.
Harder than you think. And I wrote this whole sheet of all the vitals I wanted these people to do. I was a patient, and another fellow who's an EMT was a patient. Jackie drove.
Yeah.
And we went all over Salisbury. And she kept looking in the back, are you done yet? No, we're not done yet. But little things like that scenario training that's very successful.
But it's practical, and it makes the EMT more confident when they go out, and it's an actual run.
Right, right. Well, and these are new people, mm-hmm. so they haven't had the same kind of experience, mm-hmm. and they are likely to try to use the machinery we have as opposed to doing things manually. So I insisted that everybody had to do everything manually, no machinery.
Good.
You know, so because that's what you have to do in the field.
Sure.
You know, you can't carry a 10 lead with you to the field to try to check somebody out.
Not really.
No. So, at any rate, that's the kind of training thing I do.
Now, I do remember Jackie telling me that people had scheduled days where they were on call.
Yes.
Your scheduled day is?
Monday.
And tell me about the B team.
Oh, the B team, my favorite group. It's Boyles, Belter, and Barton.
Yes.
And, of course, we all know Belter from Caballero and...
Laurie Belter.
Yeah, Laurie Belter, who's been a longtime resident of the town. And Larry Boyles, who's the electrician at Sharon Electric. And we three have been going together for a number of years, and we have a very good relationship and a very good system all worked out for ourselves. And
can you explain, in layman terms, when you get a call, what do you three do?
Well, one of the nice things about having three of us all the time is that here's just the one thing is that if somebody has something specific they need to do in the middle of the day, they just let the two of us know. It is a legal call with two EMTs. You don't need three. When we have the three of us, it is just sort of an understood thing that we take turns driving. One person will drive, two will be in the back with the patient. And then the next time around, another person will drive, two will be in the back. So we sort of trade off so everybody gets the same amount of mileage, particularly in the back.
Mm-hmm.
We have it worked out so that we all do certain things. Larry is a particularly good diagnostician, mm-hmm. and so he does a lot of that. And I get along very well with some of the elderly people. I sing to them.
Good.
We keep them calm.
Yes, that's important.
And Lori knows a ton of people, so it's always comforting for somebody in the back who has a problem. They're going to the hospital. They don't want to be in the ambulance for the most part where they hurt.
Yeah.
To know people.
Sure.
You know?
Oh, it's very comforting.
And so we have this great thing worked out. And occasionally we all, you know, if you're sick, you can drive. You know what I mean? It works out having three people.
Sure.
So.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, that's a wonderful team.
I know that you are one of three chiefs. What are the titles and who are the other people that have these titles in the ambulance?
There are four chiefs.
Oh, there are four chiefs.
Yes.
Okay. No Indians, but a lot of chiefs.
There's no Indians, no. Jackie, of course, is the chief of service.
Mm-hmm.
She's the head of the pyramid. Underneath her is Kaki Schaefer Reed, who is the assistant chief of service. And then there's me, and I am first aid chief.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have Mike Brenner, who is rescue chief.
Ah, okay, because I've tried to get a hold of Mike. Khaki's on my list for the next one, and I have hopefully done both you and Jackie.
Yeah.
Anything related to the ambulance and your specific job on it that I haven't covered that I should? Anything that you want to add?
Well, I think that as a part of, as being a chief is a, another piece of that is part of the team of administrators, if you will, where we get together and make policy decisions, we take care of problems, we all listen to the radio more than anybody else, just because that's sort of the responsibility that goes with the job. And so there's a little more to it than just ordering supplies and running trainings. I mean, we had a long session last night working through some issues with the squad, and that is a part of it. You know?
And you've got rather a large squad, and some people have been on for ages.
Long time, yes.
Yes.
We have some very long-time members.
I think she said between 40 and 50 on the squad, perhaps?
There are about 45 EMTs and half a dozen drivers.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have two EMRs, and, you know, it does start to add up.
What is an EMR?
EMR is I would never refer to it as a lesser certification, but it is the first level certification for this emergency medical service.
Okay.
And then there's EMT basic, and then there's EMT intermediate or advanced. They change the verbiage every 2 years.
Yeah.
It's the state of Connecticut.
Oh, I remember.
Yeah?
I remember. Yeah. Every 2 years they'll change the terminology.
Oh, yeah, and they do it on the testing, too, which is, unfortunate. Or they decide that when I first took my EMT class, we did primary survey, secondary survey, things like that. Then they went away from that and they did first survey, focus survey. They changed the name. Same thing, but they changed the names, which ended up being a little bit confusing. Then they went back to what we originally had, which actually made me quite happy because I could remember it. This is all simply for the testing, you know.
Oh, sure.
You have to pass the test.
Oh, yes. If you fail a test, do you get a second chance?
Absolutely, yes.
Oh, all right. Okay.
If you take the class, There are two parts, originally, there are two parts to the state test. One is a practical portion, where you actually sort of stand up on stage and perform certain skills. And there are six pieces to that practical test. There's also then a written test. There are six parts to the practical. If you fail two of the parts, you go back and take those two parts again. If you fail more than two, you have to retake the whole thing.
Ooh.
On the written test, you cannot. There is no failure. There are four or five portions of it, and you can't do five and just do one again. You do the whole thing again. So, but you have, if your class ended, let's say, in May, you have until something like April the following year to finish, complete your testing, or you have to take class again.
No, okay.
Which actually makes some sense.
It does.
Although,
it does.
All the squads in the northwest corner, the officers all know each other, and in fact, it's such a small area, really. You know just about everybody. What we do with people who are struggling through their testing a little bit is, instead of making them wait, we fund their going to a research class so they can go through it it's 20 hours or 25 hours, something like that. They can go through and do the basics really, really quickly again to refresh their memory they go try to take the thing again.
So there's a lot of help out there.
Oh, there's a lot of help. Oh absolutely. And if you don't like that teacher in this town, there's another one over here. We'll set you up with that person. You know what I mean?
That works.
Yeah,
that
why
works.
Not?
All right. Well, we're going to leave the ambulance and go to the singing.
All right, let's go to
crescendo.
Singing. Crescendo.
Now, you have a background in early music. Is that why you got involved with crescendo?
Not originally. Originally, I got involved with crescendo because I wanted another place to sing, or a place to sing. I had sort of stopped singing for a few years, and then we moved down here, and I was mostly a mother type for the beginning, because Emily was a baby. Mm-hmm. And then I couldn't stand it anymore. I had to sing, and I ran into somebody who said, oh, they have this group down at Trinity Lime Rock, and it's called Crescendo, and anybody can join. So I said, okay.
Yeah.
And I went down, and it wasn't an anyone can join. However,
not knowing Christine. No.
Right. My audition, of course, was just fine because I read. And unfortunately, she demoted me in the beginning, made me sing tenor.
Oh.
Most contraltos can sing tenor.
Yes.
And which was fine. And finally she said, this time we're going to do this. And she sent out the roster for the voice parts. And I called her up and I said, I really don't want to sing tenor anymore, okay? I really want to sing alto again. Well, you'll have to come down and re-audition for alto. I said, I was a mezzo-soprano when I was in school. At any rate, our relationship has ever been rocky. And, so then I started to sing the alto again. But anyway, I've sung with them since their beginning, basically.
And
so,
it's been going, what, 12 years?
10 years. 11, this is the 11th fall, I think. So I believe next year they're going to celebrate the 10th.
Probably.
About
how many members are in it now?
This year is a little, it varies from spring to fall and year to year. And we're doing this particular fall project with about 35, I think. Not including the soloists or the instruments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's just the choral part.
Yeah.
And you practice where?
At Trinity Lime Rock.
When?
On Monday nights.
Oh, you have a busy Monday, don't you?
Yeah.
Ambulance in the
day.
Yeah,
and I was, I was late this last Monday night for rehearsal because I was riding a late call on the ambulance, but that's okay.
It works.
So what?
It works. I don't know that much about choral singing. Tell me what the different voices are.
In most...
In this particular, in crescendo.
Well, crescendo has as many voice parts as are required. You can split any voice part into two or even three parts. For example, in some of the music we're doing this fall, there are two soprano parts, totally separate. So you have a soprano one, a soprano two. Very often those two lines are not any different in terms of their melodic content or their height. I mean, it's just two soprano lines. And then there's an alto line and a tenor line. And in one piece that I'm doing with the small group, there's two sopranos, an alto line, two tenor lines, and a bass line. It depends, but it's basically alto.
Soprano, bass, alto.
Soprano, alto, tenor, bass. And we're doing some double chorus work this time around.
It's not like barbershop where you have leads and sections. No.
I don't understand your question.
Okay. That answers my question.
Oh.
It does answer. Because with barbershop, there's different terminology and different arrangements of the parts and the voices. And in each section, there's someone that's called a lead.
Oh, well, we have section leaders, if that's what you're getting at.
That's what I'm getting at.
We don't have it in this project because funding was a bit shy. Mm-hmm. So often, though, she will, especially if the in some of the double course work that we're doing, Christine will split for the altos, because I know mostly about the altos. She'll split so she has at least a strong singer in each of the choirs. And then, you know, so that basically would be a leader type.
I know she does a lot of different kinds of concerts. What was the favorite concert that you participated in?
Bieber.
Mm. Ah.
I loved the Bieber. I love that music. I found the Chinese concert that we did this spring very interesting. It had its moments of being incredibly difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And I found it very interesting. Quite frankly, it was not my favorite, but I'll sing anything you put in front of me. If you give me a piece of music, I'll sing it, you know. So, but the Bieber was wonderful. And some of what we're doing now is quite nice. You know, it's...
Does the chorus have difficulty learning the different languages?
German.
Yeah.
Doesn't flow well off the tongue. I think it's hard for some people who don't do it enough to wrap their head around the fact that the Latin we're singing, this particular project, is German Latin, as opposed to Italian Latin or Church Latin.
And they're different.
Yes, they are.
And the pronunciation is different.
Right,
yes.
Right. The C, it's hard for people who are used to saying, you know, inimici, to say inimici.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so, but with practice...
Oh, yeah, and she is a taskmaster.
Well, she is. Although I have to say, over the 10 years that I've known her, she has mellowed.
Oh, I'm glad.
Yes. And she's still very exacting. There's no question about that.
Oh, yes.
But her style has mellowed.
Well, she's exacting of herself.
Oh, nobody gives more than she does.
No, I know.
You know,
being a clavichord pupil of hers.
Right, nobody gives more.
Yeah.
Her preparation is inordinate.
Yes,
you know.
And meticulous.
Yes, and it's easier for some people to appreciate what's happening. I sing with her on other fronts also.
Mm-hmm.
So I've gotten to know her and her style maybe a little better than the average chorister. That makes a difference.
It does.
Because I know that when she will say something, you know, she'll look directly at you and point at you and say, you know, that A was flat, and I know full well my A was not flat.
Mm-hmm.
But she heard a flat A.
Yeah.
So somebody has to be the guinea.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And
sure.
So, but that doesn't, I don't take it personally. You know,
what?
I don't take it personally. Somebody, I'm happy, it's okay. You know, if she wants to pick on me, that's okay.
Your shoulders are broad.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. She's done a lot of different, my favorite, I think, was the Dance of Death.
That was so hard.
I know it was hard, but oh, it was so wonderful.
Well, that the mixed media thing, I think, is fairly popular in terms of...
That was the first one that I had seen that she did.
Right. And but, of course, then the Chinese project was mixed media also.
Mm-hmm.
And that was very interesting to have Kiao Loy speaking Chinese.
Yes.
And then we would sing. And then he'd speak a little more, and then we'd sing. I mean, it was kind of cool.
It was.
But the you know, she likes to do things that are unknown,
mm-hmm.
not necessarily unpublished, although after her trip to Poland, she brought home some music that was
unpublished.
Basically unpublished, mm-hmm. and I think she's trying to put it together in her spare time.
What spare time?
Exactly. you know, so that that could be part of a project coming up.
Since you've been there at the beginning, other than Christine's mellowing of her style, are there other changes in the concert format or the music? She's added the early instruments, I know. That wasn't there at the beginning.
Right, but a great deal of that and the detail of each concert is relative to funding.
Oh, yes, and funding is always an issue.
Funding is an issue, and because it's kind of an unusual group, it's not like TriArts where, you know, whatever's on Broadway might come to TriArts. I mean, it's not that kind of music.
No.
Within the early music world, it is well thought of. Lots of early music people come.
Oh, yes.
Christine, of course, is a world-class harpsichordist, as you know.
Oh, yes.
And so... you know, like she did that little gig down there at the museum in New York City, and I guess it was very well attended. And anytime she and Rodrigo do something, it's always very well received. But those are all early music people. They are people who appreciate the Baroque, and or even earlier. And so they're willing to come. When people in the great bunch of people who may or may not attend the one concert look at the program and don't see anything on it that they've ever heard of in their lives, I think it's sort of a leap of faith on their part to come here if they've never been to a Crescendo concert.
Because
to come hear something about, you know, who the heck knows who that is.
It's
not Mozart or Bach or Beethoven or
the Three Bs.
You know?
And hers are always very different, very unusual, and we are so blessed in this area to have someone like Christine.
I cannot agree more. And it is so, I think it's, sometimes it gets very frustrating for her.
I know it does.
In not being able to, I mean, her relationship with, for example, the two greatest solos in our work, the countertenor, Nicholas Tamagna, and who's... He sings in Europe. I mean, he's an incredible voice. Incredible. And he's willing to come play. You know what I mean? People like that...
well, she draws them because of her reputation, too.
Well, and her expertise.
And
so it's a really... an incredible collaboration, you know?
Yeah.
And... When I think about some of the other people who are... Well, Rodrigo is world-renowned on his own merit.
Yes.
And Trisha Van Erz, who's the recorder player. You know, she's phenomenal. They're phenomenal. And they come have dinner at her house and play at church. I mean, it's just really...
Yeah.
The experience is quite... I think people don't recognize how fortunate they are to, if they are musicians, to have people like that in the area.
I think because it's been going for 10 years, there is a broader base now than there was.
I agree.
I wish, and at the concerts I've been to, I wish there had been more young people. Maybe that's changing.
Well, this one we're doing this fall, for example, the Countess Firmus, and one of the pieces is going to be sung by sopranos with a choir of junior singers. Basically,
good.
They're going to sing the cantus. And, I mean, there are not a ton of young singers around who want to sing this kind of music.
And there's not a lot of young people that want to come and sit in the audience either.
No, and that's
sad.
That's true. No, it's all very true, but it's...
But it's getting better.
Well, it is. And, you know, the audiences are greater. We're beginning to appeal more to the college age.
Good.
And,
good.
And some of that is her relationship with...
Simon Rock.
She taught up there this last year. And I think, you know, all of that and her relationship with Amherst.
Yes.
And in the early music group there. I mean, Christine's a bit of a dynamo, you know.
Oh, I know.
All in the name of music. You know,
very definitely.
Definitely. Yep.
Something else that you would like to add to the Crescendo portion that I haven't asked?
Oh, I don't think so, other than to sum it up by saying it's really an incredible experience to be able to sing with a group that sings things that are challenging, not only beautiful and with period instruments, which are very different.
Oh, yes.
Very different. And every single project that we do is a learning experience.
And that's wonderful.
Oh, it's great.
Because it keeps
it's
you
great.
Learning and challenged and
yes.
excited.
Right.
And that's what music should be.
Right. And humble.
Yes. Oh, yes.
You know.
Thank you so much.
Oh, a pleasure. A pleasure. That's good.